The Mysteries of the Brain. When I wrote The Truth of Life about 25 years ago, to expound the truth and reality of life, I had commenced with the following questions. There are hundreds of billions of galaxies in the universe. Was it you who chose to specifically exist in the one we call the Milky Way? And in this one particular galaxy, composed of 400 billion stars and the surrounding systems? Was it you who specifically wanted to exist in this particular solar system? And in this solar system, amongst all the other planets, was it you who chose planet Earth? And on planet Earth, was it your choice to come to life in this particular region? In Istanbul, a city bridging the continents, Asia and Europe. Was it you who chose the family you were born into in Istanbul? Did you choose your parents? This was how I had initiated the approach to the discussion back then. Now, let's take it a few steps further. If we are able to think, if we have a mind with the capacity to contemplate, in the mother's womb, the father's sperm unites with the mother's egg and forms a single cell. This single cell contains a genetic code that is comprised of some 3 billion letters, an accumulation of genetic information, which defines the position of your liver, your kidneys, your heart, the neurons in your heart, the neurons in your intestines, also known as your second brain, how your brain will be formed. All of this information is contained in your genes. As this information becomes activated and revealed, your physical body, in its current form, is gradually formed. Although I say your current physical body, your brain actually begins forming on the 29th day following conception. This formation is referred to as Alaq in the Quran. Mentioned in the verse, "We have created humans from Alaq." Does the word human refer to our physical body? Or does it refer to an immortal existence that is far beyond the limitations of a physical body? This is a point worth contemplating. The creation of a man from Alaq is the reference made in the Quran to the formation of the brain on the 29th day following conception. If this is the case, then let me also expound a little on how the brain actually forms, without going into too much detail, for this is a profound topic, and if I go into detail, we will have to branch out and examine each statement. So I will try to summarize it as simply and briefly as I can. Now, as the brain begins to form on the 29th day following conception, signals begin to reach the brain from all the other organs of the body. The brain stores this information. The neurons in the brain get programmed according to the frequencies of these incoming signals. and settle in the region of the brain known as the insular cortex. This then becomes the database according to which all incoming signals are evaluated and an output is formed. This output simultaneously returns as feedback and re-enters the brain as input. Now, let's keep this mechanism on our minds, for it is the pivotal point of the subject. Starting on the 29th day after conception, as all the organs are formed in the brain, the weight of the information that accumulates in the brain's database makes the brain conceive itself as this physical formation, i.e., the body. The most critical bit of information that enters this database through genetic inheritance is the concept of I. Originally, the brain is an organism, a mechanism, a device that processes the input data it receives to produce and create. Some will say, "Oh, but how can that be? Allah is the creator. For goodness sake, the brain is where the qualities denoted by the names of Allah are manifested. Let's remember the verse in the Quran, 'And you threw, not when you threw, but it was Allah who threw.' We all know it was Muhammad who threw. It was his brain, his arms, his hands. So why does the verse say it was Allah who threw?" There is a subtle distinction made in this verse. That is, the existence denoted by the name Allah being Ahad, one, and Samad, the absolute self-sufficient, is such a singular existence no other form of life can exist beyond it. Therefore, the whole of existence, everything you hear, see, perceive, learn about, are all manifested compositions of the qualities pertaining to Allah's various names. This is why all these qualities designated by Allah's names are present in the structure we call the brain. Here we can see the meaning of Allah's names Khaliq, the creator, Hotir, the maker, Sadi, the originator, and all the other names. I have explained in detail what these names mean in the Key to the Quran and the Beautiful Names booklet. Both are available on my website. Now, the pivotal point we must understand is the brain is like an open house. When visitors come over, they actually stay. They don't leave again. They become a permanent tenant, a resident. So what happens when all of this information starts residing in the brain? The brain starts taking in everything it hears from outside. In fact, this begins all the way back in the womb. The baby brain receives the information coming from the outside and stores it in its database. Later on, in his lifetime, when he has to evaluate a particular bit of information, the previously stored data in his database becomes activated, and the new information gets processed by the previously stored information and eventually enables a judgment to be formed. We must understand this mechanism really well. Unfortunately, the brains of the people have become like hoard houses. They are constantly collecting rubbish, and not just collecting, but also editing and labeling according to the values and judgments imposed and conditioned by their environments. Such brains automatically receive all kinds of information that is fed to them, whether the data is received through the eyes or the ears or other receptors, all incoming data is subject to the same automated evaluation process. After which, the resulting output is projected in one's holographic world. As it gets projected, it also gets labeled according to one's set of values. As such, our lives are spent inside our heads, in a world created by the database in our brains. This is our cocoon. So all of this information reaches our brain from the outside without our will or control, and it gets processed automatically, and as a result, we start thinking, feeling, and desiring certain things. But if the brain is such an automated device, is there anything we can actually do? This point is critical, my friends. If there was nothing we could do, then surely so many Nabis and Rasuls would not have come to remind us of the things we can do. The point is, if we are capable of receiving external data, if we can receive data shaped by the culture, traditions, and conditionings of our environment, then surely we must be able to receive other forms of data based on research and study of other fields of knowledge. Our database has this capacity. If we can hear the Nabi's message, if our database permits us to, that is, if our database hasn't become predetermined and fixed about a particular topic due to previously stored information, then we can hear the Nabi talking to us, telling us, "Your existence transcends death. You are an immortal being. You are not comprised of this physical body. At some point, this body will stop functioning, but you will continue to exist indefinitely. Therefore, you will either continue your existence in a state of eternal pain or a state of paradise." Stephen Hawking claims he has searched the whole universe but couldn't find paradise. Of course he can't. Unlike planet Earth, paradise isn't based on or formed by matter. It isn't a material dimension of existence. All creatures in the universe are formed by dark energy. And above this ocean of dark energy, like icebergs on an ocean, formations of matter abide. Although we have come to exist as matter on this iceberg-like physical universe, the quantum dimension, which is the origin of matter, also constitutes our origin and the origin of our brains. Therefore, as I mentioned earlier, our brain evaluates various wavelengths of information, although the translation of this information into matter occurs through the means of DNA and genetic procedures, or to be more precise, the elements that constitute their chemical makeup, the energy and wave dimensions in their origin, never cease to exist. Hence, the human brain is also the human spirit. During the formation of the brain, the spirit also forms within the brain. When the biological aspect of the brain stops functioning, the energy aspect of the brain remains. This energy aspect is what we call the spirit. It is the backup of data that has accumulated in the brain throughout one's lifetime. So this mass information or energy, which is the essence and the origin of the brain, will continue to exist indefinitely. Because nothing in existence can become non-existent. If such an energy mass of information has become existent, then it will continue to exist forever. If we can comprehend this, then we can turn back to the question of what it is that we can do. What we can do is evaluate the data that inadvertently enters our brain with scientific knowledge or the authentic teachings of religion, which, despite differing opinions, are one and the same in order to discover our own essence and origin. The frontal cortex has the advantage of monitoring the momentary senses and the chemical reactions coming from the insular cortex and the amygdala, thus reminding us not to act on the impulse of the amygdala. For the first act is from the devil, the rest are from Raman. What this refers to is the capacity of the frontal cortex to override the behavior resulting from the amygdala based on the brain's extensive database. So if we can appraise and utilize the data coming from the Rasul or knowledge based on contemporary science, then we can see how the brain works. When we upload new information to the brain, it is taken to the processing region. And so, this new bit of scientific or religious information gets interpreted and evaluated and enables the person to think and question in a better light. When I say person here, I mean the brain, the mechanism of the brain. The most valuable thing we can do is to be in a receptive mode to scientific knowledge, to be able to appraise and utilize original knowledge based on the Quran and the Rasul in order to control the uninhibited, superfluous data coming from our parents, environment, school, media, and all other sources. Again, it is the brain that will determine this. The brain does this automatically, whether you want it to or not. So you can say, "I want this," all you like. But the truth is, behind the words, "I want this," is that the brain will only output the interpretation it makes of the input. Everybody, with no exception, is constantly experiencing this truth. An input comes, it gets evaluated and interpreted with and according to the already existing data in the brain, and from this an output is rendered automatically. When I say output, I don't mean it goes out of the brain, of course. By output, I mean a decision or a judgment that is made, a meaning that is derived from the synthesis that occurs in the brain. And these meanings are then either projected to our awareness, and we say things like, "I think this, I feel this, I see this," or not projected, or used for physical maintenance, depending on what the brain thinks is necessary. If we can grasp this, we will understand that we are like data living in the brain's world. And that data is called human. The essence of the mechanism called the brain is the compositional manifestation of the knowledge and qualities of the origin, the source of all existence. Thus, the concept of reaching Allah, or reaching the essence of creation, is actually a realization that takes place in the brain, where the information in the database feels, realizes, and turns towards its origin, from which it derives its existence. This origin is the same in all of us. This is why we say we are all one in essence. And as new meanings are derived from new data that is constantly received and processed, this oneness of essence continues to manifest in innumerous ways. And thus, we spend our lives in this database. By database, please don't think I'm referring to the flesh brain. Within the depths of the flesh, lies the quantum potential from which dark energy-based waves of data, or spirit as it is traditionally known, emanate. This spirit is also a body structure, as our bodies are today. The information contained in this structure is human. So, here is this body, the mass of waves within the depths of this body is the spirit. And the informational content of this mass of waves is human. The most important factor here is the monitoring of the incoming data by the frontal cortex. While the frontal cortex monitors functions such as intellect, reason, and logic to construct man's awareness, there is also another region of the brain, known as the epiphysis, or the pineal gland. I receive increasingly interesting information regarding this region every day. A very recent one, for example, was about the pineal gland and longevity. A young rat's pineal gland was removed and placed in an older rat's brain. And the old rat was observed to live 34 months than its usual life expectancy. On the other hand, when the older rat's pineal gland was inserted into the young rat's brain, the young rat's life was shortened by 18 months. As such, the epiphysis serves multiple functions. We already know that melatonin and serotonin have profound effects on human emotions. But the epiphysis possesses another quality. That is, its ability to interpret the wavelengths of the knowledge of unity originating from the quantum potential within the depths of the universe. While the general structure of the brain processes information of lower frequencies, the pineal gland possesses the ability to decipher high-frequency waves of data emanating from the origins of creation within the depths of the cosmic dimension and then projecting it to the brain, which, in my understanding, and you may or may not agree, is directly related to the functions of the heart neurons. If the heart neurons can stimulate and activate the neurons in the epiphysis on the 120th day after conception during the development of the brain, that person will possess the ability to decipher and transfer these high-frequency waves to the brain. If such an activation has not taken place on that specific day, then this activation cannot occur in the epiphysis at a later stage. This is my understanding of the hadith regarding the fortunate and the unfortunate ones. This is how it is according to my research. This is what makes the heart so important. When a heart transplant is done, one person's heart is planted into another person and nothing changes, other than a few characteristic changes that aren't too significant. But a brain transplant cannot be done. The point of the matter is every brain develops in a unique way, lives a unique life, and continues its eternal existence in its own unique way. Hence, the absurd stories of old about human spirits in the heavens, or spirits created by some god who lives on Sirius or someplace, and how these spirits come to Earth and enter a body, then leave the body and spend time elsewhere, then come back and enter the brain, and so on. Such reincarnation fairy tales have now become completely obsolete. Reincarnation is an old story. There is no such thing. Due to other reasons that I wish not to expound on, certain societies who have not understood the reality, essence, and the mechanism of the brain have contrived such stories to be able to construe the data in the human brain in regards to the past. If we have understood this, let's continue with the rest after a break.